Good afternoon. Welcome to the Eco News Report. I'm your host this week, Jennifer Kalt, board member of the North Coast Environmental Center. The Eco News Report is an exclusive feature of KHSU brought to you by the North Coast Environmental Center, publisher of our regional environmental newspaper, the Eco News. Today, my guest is Dan Seeley, the NEC's legislative analyst who's here visiting from Washington, D.C.
Hello, Jen.
Hi. Thanks for coming, Dan. Great to have you here. So today we're going to talk a little bit about federal legislation and the intersection between local grassroots organizations like the NEC and its member groups and what goes on in Washington, D.C. Before we get into that, though, Dan, why don't you tell us a little bit about your background? You have a long history with Humboldt County, and I know that you recently retired from the National Park Service, where you were the head of Natural Resources and Sciences for the Washington, D.C. region. But why don't you give our listeners a little bit of your background, starting with your board membership in the NEC?
Yeah, I was one of those students at Humboldt. I came here in 1970. I was a natural resources major, and I enjoyed not only the beautiful area here, but the faculty was truly inspiring. And there were organizations on campus that were trying to affect a change both locally here in the community as well as a larger. Things like the highway and public transportation, bike paths, so we could get from Eureka to Arcata safely without going on the freeway.
We're still fighting that battle, aren't we?
Yep. And also a very huge issue at the time, and one that really resonated with me, was Redwood National Park. Having come here from Oklahoma, where we had trees, but nothing like redwoods, and then to learn first how beautiful they were, but then that they were being logged right up to the edge of the national park, and learning from my studies what that actually meant ecologically and for streams, it really invigorated me to do more. And also, I was very active with an organization on campus called Boot and Blister. Boot and Blister really became kind of the eyes and ears for many of the conservationists that weren't able to get out as much into some of these more wilderness areas. We were working with wilderness in the Trinity Alps as well and Klamath. And so with Boot and Blister, I wound up on the board for the new North Coast Environmental Center as the Boot and Blister representative. And folks that I knew then, and some who I still am friends with, but important people like Tim McKay and Wes Chesbrough and John Amadio, who's now in Sacramento. It was wonderful to combine voices. There were a lot of really good people doing really good work here, but we all were using the same inspiration and some of the same information and experience, but we weren't very good at combining that message for better effect. So NEC had a powerful voice very early on because of the nature of firsthand experience. When I left here, though, when I graduated, I was lucky enough to get a job right away at Muir Woods National Monument and then various other national parks. But my time here was really important in how I formed a view, I think, of conservation and the ability of an individual to make a difference. I saw that happening every day here, whether it was the board for Arcata, the city council changed while I was here. It's the first time we had faculty who became members of the board, Rudy Becking. Alex Stillman was new on the board, Dan Hauser, and these were new voices in Arcata. So we felt like we had friendly voices on Arcata City Council and later on the Board of Supervisors. So it really felt like we could make a difference.
So what led you to the career in the National Park Service that landed you ultimately in Washington, D.C.?
Well, I thought I probably was not cut out from the mold to be a federal employee or bureaucrat, but lo and behold, I did wind up being that. But I was very fortunate that I wound up in beautiful places like Muir Woods and Cape Cod National Seashore and Golden Gate Recreation Area, Marin Headlands, which was a wonderful environment to use that firsthand experience and tell the public. What I learned at Humboldt was that I needed to use that information to pass along to the people who were going to make a difference, which were really voters outside of necessarily this area. There were people making decisions important to Humboldt that weren't necessarily just living here. There was a broader, it was the state government, it was the federal government. But working for the National Park Service, I felt like I was with comrades. There were many people who had the same kind of dedication to the environment that I felt I had. Up to the day I left the National Park Service, it was a learning experience. I worked with wonderful people who, many of them were brilliant and many of them were very creative, and they had new ideas. They were young people right out of college, as well as people, PhD scientists who had worked for the government for a while. And whether it was climate change science or whether it was restoration, ecological restoration, I learned from my colleagues and the people, the private partners, organizations that we worked with every day. So I never went home bored. I usually went home knowing that I needed to do some more reading or learning.
So you recently became the NEC's legislative analyst, and this is a new volunteer position that the NEC is delighted to have you working in because, as you say, that people in D.C. and Sacramento make decisions that affect us on a daily basis, and we need a lot more connection with them. So talk a little bit about how you're going to help NEC and its member groups like EPIC and Humboldt Baykeeper and Native Plant Society, et cetera, bring our issues to the forefront in D.C.
This is kind of a new working relationship, and I'm very excited about it. What I'm hoping is that it will be a very large information exchange. I can learn from the folks here in the local community, the organizations and the people about the issues that are important to them. If there's a federal role back in Washington, D.C. with Congress or an agency like the Park Service or the Forest Service, I can get information from those agencies and bring it back to people here who care. And if it's going to affect their lives and they want to affect a change or engage in that conversation on the federal level, then I can help them do that. I think, as you said, we're all so busy and we want to just be able to vote for somebody who will represent us and then we don't have to worry about it again. But the fact is, even the people who do want to represent us well, who have our very best interests at heart once they get to Washington or Sacramento, are really, really busy. And there's a lot of very important work they have to do. So if my issue is important to a bunch of people in Arcata, Humboldt, Eureka, Trinity County, Del Norte County, anywhere in the North Coast, if that's important to people, we need to make sure that it doesn't get lost in the kind of constant flurry of activity that goes on there. And the way you do that is to be present. It's not just a matter of voting for somebody, but contacting either the local office here to ask questions and get information, and also in Washington, D.C., where these decisions really are made every single day. There are laws talked about. Many of them never become laws. And that work that's going on in Washington, D.C. needs to include a local voice so we don't get lost in the fray.
Right. I mean, we have lots of great national organizations like Sierra Club and the Natural Resources Defense Council working on many of these important issues, like protecting the Clean Water Act and so many other things. But as far as having the local connection with groups that are here in Northern California working on the ground on the issues as they affect people on a daily basis is really important. And we don't really have a lot of access to folks in D.C. So this is very exciting for the NEC to have this connection with you and be working on this.
Now that I don't work for the government anymore, I can actually go and participate in politics in a real democratic way. And I love working with a group of people that have similar concerns and care that I do. So it's a great opportunity. And I happen to live in Washington, D.C. I'm not moving back to this beautiful area anytime soon, unfortunately. But regardless, Washington, D.C. is actually not a bad place to live. And I can make good use of that to help the things that are important to us here as well.
Well, and it's a really interesting time here, too, because as most of our listeners know, that our congressional district has got changed, and we're adding Trinity County to our district, and we're also becoming part of the district with Marin County, and a lot of people here locally have concerns that a lot of our issues will just get lost in the, you know, the bigger picture of the powerful and the more pressing issues of the Bay Area counties that we're going to be part of the district with. So it's a really good time. We're having a new congressman or congresswoman, depending on who gets elected, that we'll be building a relationship with and learning about federal legislation and how things actually work in D.C. So if you're just joining us, this is Jen Kalt with the NEC, and I'm interviewing Dan Seeley, NEC's legislative analyst from Washington, D.C. So about federal legislation, can you just give the listeners a sort of a 101, how does it actually get enacted and where does the local grassroots organization fit into that?
Well, I'm still learning this myself. I have to go back to my chart of how a bill gets through Congress now and then to make sure I'm talking to the right person. But basically, I think one of the key pieces of how we can be important and strategic and having our voice heard is that a lot of the legislation, before it really is formed into legislation, goes through a process of what's called hearings. And hearings are where committees in Congress invite people to a committee, a hearing, to talk, answer questions. They usually give statements, and then they will be asked questions by both parties, the committee and the House right now. The majority party is the Republican Party. So the Republican chair of the committee will be leading those discussions and deciding, really, they decide what the agenda is going to be. And then through those hearings, they begin to put together legislation based on what they learn in those hearings. Of course, much of it's not in the hearing itself, but the hearing is kind of one part of that, that we as the public get to hear it. So that's, to me, a really critical point, to be at the either the Senate or the House when those hearings are happening, to listen and to get information to those people who are beginning to write legislation or decide if they're going to write laws, new laws or policies for the federal government, and then to get information to them about how that will impact positively or negatively the lives and the resources, the ecosystems, the beautiful places here in the North Coast. So that's really the first step. But then I think beyond that, it really is a matter of maintaining really a routine relationship, whoever that new representative in Congress is in the House. But whenever you find out who that new representative is, I think people on the North Coast and certainly North Coast Environmental Center will need to build a really good communication between the staff and that person and yourself so that we can make sure that those important issues don't get lost. So those personal relationships really are beyond the day you vote. Then the people who are actually out there working for that congressperson, trying to get all that work done. And those staff people work very hard. It's not an easy job.
Yeah, especially with all the lobbyists constantly knocking on their doors. I'm sure it's tough. And it's really amazing, actually, you know, despite the fact that there is so much money and so much special interest lobbying in government these days, it is still an amazing thing to me how, you know, groups of volunteer advocates can actually make a difference. So it's actually very empowering. So let's talk a little bit about specifics. I mean, I think the reality is that the situation in federal government right now is probably more a matter of protecting the environmental laws that have been on the books for the past three decades or so, more than creating new laws, especially in these times, you know, of all this economic distress and, you know, the constant drumbeat of we need to slash environmental protection so that we can boost jobs, even though most of us who protect the environment believe that jobs and the strong economy depend on a strong, healthy environment. But anyway, that's the rhetoric. But so we know the Congress now has, especially in the House, has been attacking the Clean Water Act, the Environmental Protection Agency. The Endangered Species Act is going to be especially used in the next year to be an election issue. So can you talk a little bit about the Endangered Species Act threats and what you expect to see in the next year?
Yeah, I guess it's the backdrop for that. I think it's part of that part that Washington that never really makes sense. And it's that you hear these politicians make statements on whichever side, and they're always this or that. If we don't do this, that happens. It's these what I call false dichotomies, so that you can either protect endangered species or you can have jobs, but you can't have both. Well, we all know those are not true, that you can protect the species that are most endangered and you can still have more than enough jobs. If the jobs we need, really, all of those require getting rid of endangered species. We're in much worse shape, I think, than any of us knew. Hopefully we're not. But in fact, Congress, the House, has said explicitly that they are going to have a year of hearings about the Endangered Species Act. I don't necessarily think that the Endangered Species Act will go away, but I think there is a chipping away of what was accomplished through the Endangered Species Act by exempting processes and species and limiting which ones can be put on there, regardless of whether they deserve to be listed because of their threats. And I think it is very easy, if you look at any location, to try to trump up an idea that if we don't, well, we can't save all of those name your favorite species or least favorite species if they're tiny, you know, the little tiny non, you know, impressive big organisms, those little insects, butterflies, fish or whatever, it's very easy to say, well, we need this because we need jobs and America needs these resources. And that's much more important than those fish. Well, again, we're bright people. We can figure out ways to protect those jobs and protect those fish. This is not an either or situation in my mind. And whenever politicians or any or groups even try to couch a discussion in those terms, I always try to step back. And I think it's helpful if we can talk to the people in Congress to step back too. Let's not make this about endangered species and jobs. Let's make this about how we can get this work done. And there are going to be trade-offs. I mean, I am a bit of an optimist Pollyanna, but I do believe that we can minimize the severity of those trade-offs on both sides if we're willing to talk and work together. I think people have forgotten that we have decades now of environmental protection that we did not have back in the 1960s. In the 1960s, auto emissions were horrible. And you and I walking down the street would just accept a level of air pollution that today would be unacceptable. And the only reason we don't even remember what the air was like was because of the Clean Air Act. The reason we have ways to stop pollution in our rivers and our lakes and the ocean is because of the Clean Water Act. And the reason that the public can engage with the federal government at a community level in effecting an action by an agency like the National Park Service or the Forest Service or the Fish and Wildlife Service or Federal Highways is because of the National Environmental Policy Act that was created by Richard Nixon. I mean, this goes back to fairly conservative origins, but the reason even conservative politicians were willing to champion these causes is because they needed to. The environment really was that bad. We had the oil spills in Santa Barbara in the late 60s that really shocked people that this could happen. And if we had had the laws in place from the 1960s when the BP oil spill happened, BP would be walking away without having to clean up the Gulf at all. It doesn't excuse what happened. It would be best if we didn't have those things. But compared to the tools we had with the Santa Barbara oil spills on the beaches in the 1960s, we have many tools now to at least fix some of those problems. So my big concern is that we need to be diligent about keeping those laws strong, all of them, and not letting Congress chipping away at them for short-term gain.
Mm-hmm. Well, in a big way that they chip away at them isn't really the changing of the laws themselves, right? It's cutting the budgets and basically Fish and Wildlife Service, I believe, had a number of years where there were very few new listings of endangered species. And even still today, it seems like an environmental group like Center for Biological Diversity has to take legal action to force them to actually make a decision about listing a new species. And it comes back to, where are we putting the money?
Right.
And so can you talk a little bit about what you've told me over the last few months about the new financial criteria for new spending bills in D.C.? Because I think that's going to make things even more gridlock than they have been in recent years.
Right. So the new philosophy, I don't know how new it is, but it's kind of more apparent to me anyway, is that if you want to have some kind of an action that is going to require additional funds, then the congressmen who are supporting that and the groups need to have a way to pay for it. So if you want to, for example, reauthorize the Marine Debris Act, which pays for studying where debris comes from our beaches and pays for some of the work like North Coast Environmental Center has been doing for decades, that money's going to run out and we would like to reauthorize that. Well, some people would say, well, we can only reauthorize that with that money if we find out where we're going to take that money from. So I think people just think that it's a decision, oh, this is a good idea, and yeah, we're going to have to get that budget, so we'll find that money. Well, now the Congress people and the organizations who are trying to support these innovations and these reauthorizations, even it's not even anything new sometimes, are being told, well, the only way we can do that is if we cut this money for something else. And usually it's not something that – it's another conservation initiative. So it's very difficult then sometimes for a congressional member who even wants to support your viewpoint to actually support a piece of legislation if they're going to have to go cut something from some other program, related or unrelated. And it's a conversation that's a very real conversation on the Hill. Now, whether or not – I'm not a budget person. And certainly there is a limited amount of money that we have for any budget. It's not right to just pretend we have unlimited amounts of money. But this is a new conversation. We didn't used to have this particular conversation. recession. And certainly the economy is very bad and people are suffering in the United States. And it's not to be cavalier at all about the need to watch out for those people. But we also need to not let that become a reason not to do the right thing. If it really is, the conversation really is, we can only do this if we find the money, well, then we need to go find that money if it's an important enough topic that affects our lives.
Mm-hmm.
But it is a new, for me anyway, it's new, and I'm sure it's driven by the deficit, which wasn't a problem a few years ago, and the economy, which wasn't a problem a few years ago. So we've made some decisions to use some money in this country that have now resulted in these decisions being the criteria for whether or not we can do the right thing or not. And it's very disappointing to me that we make these big decisions with our federal budget, whether it's how we're going to spend it or how we're going to collect it. And then we get down to these fairly small amounts of money. It's almost like having to have a bake sale, you know, to stop marine debris and these nets from ghost fishing off the coast of Northern California, which is, you know, horrible for the fishermen and the industry as well as the environment. But if that's what we have to do, that's what we have to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, and then the converse is true, but not as discussed. Like this morning, we had a meeting over at Epic, and Andrew Orahosky was talking about how the decision to open up a roadless area and build a bunch of roads, which then have to be maintained for, you know, decades, if not forever, or they have to require huge amounts of money to decommission them to protect the fish from all the sediment that's bleeding into our rivers. Basically, to say that a wilderness area is actually going to be saving us money because we don't have all these terrible roads built isn't really part of the conversation. But on a more positive note, let's talk.
Well, theoretically, they are supposed to include those long-term costs as well as the short-term. And that's where the public, whenever it comes to public meetings with NEPA, if it actually gets to a community meeting with the National Environmental Policy Act. So if they say we're soliciting comments on our EIS or environmental impact statement on this action, or that California has an equal kind of version of that with the California Environmental
Quality Act.
Thank you. Not living here anymore. I struggle with those words sometimes. That's a call for you to actually go remind them. You need to include the long-term cost of doing the remediation of those logging roads, the cost to us on our water quality, to loss of fisheries. All of those things are supposed to be captured in that analysis to make a decision, but they are frequently not. So we need to remind them.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the National Marine Fisheries Service just recently put out a draft coho recovery plan for comment, which has been extended to May 4th, I believe. And there's quite a bit of information in there about those direct impacts of all the logging roads and all the various resource extractions that have been done over the years here, and what the cost will be to recover coho so that they don't go extinct. It's, I think, something like $3.6 billion if we had all of our stars and planets align and did all the work that NIMF says we need to do to recover those populations. On a more positive note, let's talk a little bit about the potential for wilderness, because in the last wilderness bill in 2006, I believe, that Congressman Thompson championed, it was whittled down to just the north coast of California because the representative who represents Trinity County would not have any wilderness in his district. And so I
think he wasn't alone. I think there were a few others too.
Yeah. Well, I believe that in Trinity County, the last wilderness adopted was in 1984 when the Trinity Alps and Marble Mountains and Russian Wilderness were adopted. And so bringing Trinity County into our district, I know, has many NEC members very excited, because we have representatives on the NEC board from Trinity County, and, you know, we certainly have the Underwood roadless area straddles the Trinity Humboldt border, and that was excluded from the 2006 Wilderness Act. So I think that we have some potential there to be looking at new wilderness in Trinity County, but also in other parts of Northern California. So tell us a little bit about how the topic of new wilderness areas will be raised in congressional hearings and what sorts of information people here on the North Coast can bring to that process.
I know the surveys that were done by North Coast Environmental Center, their members recently, and talking about what issues were important to them, wilderness, not explicitly, but certainly embedded in many of those important issues is wilderness too. I'm a very strong advocate of the wilderness areas and expanding those where we can. What happens in Congress right now, what I've learned in the last several months, is I have to separate rhetoric from action. So if a person is in Congress and was elected by either a fairly moderate or conservative area of the nation, then the rhetoric is wilderness is just cuts jobs. Wilderness destroys jobs. We don't want to have any more wilderness. And in fact, what we'd like to do is get rid of some of the wilderness that we have. And some of them are study areas for wilderness. So they are in de facto wilderness areas, but they haven't actually been determined to be wilderness yet because of process. So the rhetoric in the meetings and when you hear people talking is that they don't support any wilderness. And there are people on both sides of the aisle who will have that kind of rhetoric of various types. But there are certainly many champions of wilderness in Congress as well, even still. I love that Betty White just came out doing lots of ads for wilderness areas.
Mm-hmm.
But then when you see the actions by Congress, in the last session, we found new wilderness bills authored by both Republicans and Democrats in the North Coast area, Oregon and California. So in fact, it is recognized as an important feature and an important method to protect not just ecosystems, but community water systems and jobs that are based in those wilderness areas, whether it's recreation or the protection that it provides for property values near wilderness areas. There are many, many benefits, and it's not really this jobs versus wilderness. So as a result, I was very encouraged to see that there were bills that were introduced from both Republicans and Democrats to increase wilderness areas in Southern Oregon and North Coast of California. Now, some of those may not be as big as some of the designations we would like to see. Some of them may be compromises, but the idea that Congress is no longer authoring bills to extend wilderness is not true. They are. So that's the good news. But the bad news is that it's not easy. And so that's where it really does take a strong voice by local people to fight some of those bigger issues that may want to commercialize our wilderness areas or change the nature of these pristine areas, whether it's drilling for oil in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, or whether it's a new road for off-road vehicles through making a new corridor in order to access a point. There are many, many ways to chip away at the true values of wilderness. And I think it's an area that I have an interest in. I know NEC does, and I know many of the folks here in the North Coast of California are very interested in wilderness. And I'm looking forward to new opportunities because of the new congressional district and bringing in Trinity County. I think that brings us some new opportunities. And with regard to the fact that it's going to be a new congressional district, you know, we're going to be working with citizens from Marin County and closer down to the Bay Area, even though there's a lot more people there and they will have their own needs and desires and voice. I think in many ways we have a lot of commonality. So I think it'll be an opportunity for us to really capitalize on those common values. There's a lot of great conservation that started in some of those areas. So mm-hmm. I'm looking at it with a very positive potential, no matter who's elected.
Well, that is very exciting, definitely. So the last thing I wanted you to tell our listeners about is you started writing a new feature article in the EcoNews, and it's basically Legislative Watch. And tell the listeners a little bit about what to expect in your columns in the EcoNews.
I'm going to just take little bits and pieces from what I'm listening to on the Hill and letting people know what I see. The reality is that most of the bills that are introduced in Congress don't go anywhere, and that's probably a good thing. But I'll be kind of just giving some really short pieces about those, really just kind of some bullets almost, and a few paragraphs of related legislation. So you get a feel for what's going on at some of those combined legislation and what the rhetoric is around them. And there will be particular pieces of legislation that members of the NEC or the NEC board will be interested in that I'll be probably providing more additional information on. Although its focus is on legislation, because all of the federal agencies are headquartered in Washington, D.C. as well, if there are issues that are related to how national forests are managed or how national parks are managed or how Fish and Wildlife Service does their work, if there's new things that are coming up of interest to readers of the EcoNews or on the radio show, I'll be providing that in the Legislative Watch as well. And I work with the editor of the EcoNews, Morgan, and we've been working on some fun articles, interesting articles to me anyway. Hopefully they will be to readers. And I look forward to doing a few more of those as well. But the Legislative Watch, I'm going to try to keep up with in each issue. I've actually learned to like this stuff. I was never a political wonk at all. It's like some communities talk about football or they talk about fishing and they talk about politics in Washington, D.C. And I guess it's happened to me. It started to take root for better or worse. But since I'm there, I might as well enjoy it. So,
yeah. Well, you have to enjoy it to do it, I'm sure. So people should also know that they can sign up for action alerts at the NEC's website and also keep an eye on the website because the EcoNews comes out every other month. And so a lot of times these things will be coming up in such short time frames that we'll be sending out emails. And if you want to keep up on that, you can go to our website and sign up for action alerts. This has been the EcoNews Report. My name is Jennifer Kalt, and I've been your host for the past half hour. Today, my guest was Dan Seeley, NEC's legislative analyst from Washington, D.C. If you'd like to replay this interview or share it with others, you can go to the public affairs page on the KHSU website at khsu.org, where these programs are archived for 2 weeks after they air. Previous shows are also posted on the North Coast Environmental Center's website at yournec.org. If you have any questions or comments about this program, please call KHSU's listener comment line at 826-6089. The EcoNews Report is produced for KHSU, located at Humboldt State University in cooperation with the North Coast Environmental Center. Many thanks to Fred McLaughlin for engineering. Join us again next Thursday at 1:30 right here on KHSU for the EcoNews Report.